Well, there is absolutely no doubt. There is nothing quite as demanding as live theater, to the artist, that is. Set design, lighting design, costume design, sound design, stage management, choreography, music direction, and stage direction are all keys to the success of the production, and it offers support for the actors. Brett Oliveira is technical director at Pennsylvania Playhouse and has been receiving kudos and praise for his set designs, his lighting designs, set constructions for the past several seasons, and, of course, for the last 12 shows in a row, in addition to designing for area high schools and theaters. He also does a mean tap dance on stage as a performer. Since theater and dance combines the talents of performer and designers, today we're also chatting with Sarah Carlson, founder and artistic director of DanceLink, currently in rehearsal for the Ice House Tonight, the production of The Cloud of Unknowing, a dance exploring the human response of uncertainty. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon, WDIY 88.1 Allentown, and I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we glory in the conversation with Brett Oliveira and with Sarah Carlson about the glory of theater and the glory of dance in the Lehigh Valley. Welcome, Brett.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great.
Good. So this is really your 12th show in a row?
Yes. I came in for one and did lighting, and they didn't have someone, this guy named George Miller, didn't have someone to build a set for his next show, so he asked me if I would. So I said, oh, okay, and I just kind of never left.
That's interesting. So it goes back to Kill a Mockingbird?
La Cage Fall, right?
La Cage Fall. All right.
I just kept doing the one after and the one after and the one after.
Now, this is the Pennsylvania Playhouse we're talking about, of course, and the Playhouse has just kicked off their 2016 season, in the interest of full disclosure, with a piece that George directed, but Brett, that you designed and built, Christopher Durang play.
Yes, it's called Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. It's a whole lot of names. it is Christopher Durang's taking his take on Chekhov, basically. He takes characters that are Chekhovian in nature from Chekhov plays, and he puts them in a contemporary setting. And it's a farce, but there's also a lot of a very seriousness to it. There's a lot of poignancy to it. It deals with family relationships. A critic once described it as a comedy about miserable people, which I think is a pretty accurate description. For this show, most of it takes place on a sun porch. So we were trying to figure out how to design this and go with a wider open feeling. So George actually came up with the idea. He said, what if you don't do any walls? So we actually removed all the walls. We stripped all the curtains. The space is completely open, and it really gives it a much more expansive feel. Hmm. So many people have come in to see the show, and they've said it looks so much bigger in here. It looks so much bigger. And with this specific show, I think that really helped with some of the hopelessness that these characters feel. They're in this big, open, darker area. It really worked nicely with this specific space and this specific show.
I hadn't thought about that with the bigger, darker, open space. And for the listener, there are several kinds of stages when you see theater. If you see it in a traditional proscenium house, what we call proscenium, it's a shallow stage with a frame. Mm-hmm. The Playhouse is not set up like that, is it?
No, I don't know what they were thinking. The Playhouse used to be set up as a traditional proscenium theater, but they had a fire in the 70s. So when they rebuilt it, they did what's called a black box. And basically the stage is pushed into a corner, and you have audience on about 2.5 sides. So it's not a traditional stage where everybody is looking at the same view. When you design or even act on this stage, you have to play to 2 or 3 different angles. So it really forces you to think outside the box and be a little bit more creative, which is one of the reasons I love working in the space so much.
Mm. Yeah, it's thrust theater, and it's best because it's kind of a miniature Guthrie. And that makes it really challenging to the director as well as the set designer. And
of course, yeah.
The front row, you can literally, if you stretch out your feet, put them on the edge of the stage, which was very interesting when we did Full Monty. That's a show that involves some stripping, so the people in the front row may have gotten a little bit more of an eyeful than they intended.
But the last show you just finished, was White Christmas.
Correct.
And this included a gigantic Christmas tree right in the middle of the stage.
We struggled with White Christmas. There's so many different scenes and so many different settings in it. We weren't sure how we were going to accomplish this on the space. We don't have wings, what they're called in theater, when you can push things off to the side.
Right.
Everything has to stay on stage the entire time at the Playhouse. So we tried to decide how can we have everything hidden in plain sight. So we decided it's White Christmas. Let's make everything Christmas presents. So we built a giant Christmas tree that went up into the ceiling, and there were 8-foot-tall Christmas presents hidden underneath it that rolled out and opened and split in half and unwrapped, and that was how we managed to get all of our different scenes accomplished for that show. We just hid it in plain sight.
Great.
I know that we were talking about this a little bit earlier. The average audience member might not always, well, if we're doing our jobs well, might not always be aware of the kind of challenges there are to things like a set design in a space like that, like how to hide people when there's no wings, or costumes when you can't change, when you can't go anyplace to change. Your experience on other stages, you work with schools in the area.
I currently work at Whitehall High School.
Okay.
I also worked with Notre Dame High School for a number of years. I've done shows at MUNOPCO. I've been all over the place.
Yeah. And those in a more traditional proscenium setting, there's other issues.
Yeah,
but
you have a lot more options in a traditional proscenium. You can fly in backdrops. You have wing space where you can duck off to the side and do your costume changes. You're also not sitting 2 feet away from your audience, so it's easier to, you know, fudge some of the costumes. You don't have to worry about makeup as much. It's very different when the audience members are 6 feet away from you.
What has been your most challenging project, do you think, over the past years of designing sets?
The most challenging hasn't happened yet. It's coming up. It's City of Angels.
Oh, yes.
We're doing that in about 2 more shows. The conceit with that is that half the show takes place in modern day, which is done in color, and half the show takes place in black and white as part of a noir detective novel.
Oh.
So you have to build your sets, your costumes, everything you have to build out of pure black and pure white. You can't mix colors. You can't buy gray. You have to make everything from those pure colors. And then when you hit it with blue or gray lighting, you get a black and white washout effect. So it hasn't happened yet, but I know I'm not going to sleep for about 2 months while we're trying to get that show ready.
Which is great because you're also a lighting designer. So you can argue with yourself on many nights.
So I can be very unreasonable sometimes too. So that often happens.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the season coming up? The Playhouse season doesn't start in a sense in September, but with the new year.
January to December. We are currently on stage. We have Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, which is the show George had directed. Tonight, we actually have auditions going on in about half an hour for Rumors. That is our next production. That is a Neil Simon farce. It's a very fancy, upscale dinner party, and there may or may not have been a murder, and it's all these people in evening gowns running around, slamming doors, running up and downstairs. That opens in April. After that, we have City of Angels, which is the black and white color one that I won't be sleeping for most of May and June and getting ready.
And that one's being directed by Bill Muterman.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. After that, we are doing Big, which was a Tom Hanks movie in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Little boy wishes to be big. He wakes up. He's 30. For that, I get to build a gigantic light-up piano. So that's going to be my challenge for Big.
And who's directing?
Big is Mark Briner.
Yep. Okay.
After that, we are doing The Miracle Worker. Claire Freeman's directing that. I actually get a break on that one.
Oh.
My friend Dan Lewis is building the set, and there's a girl, Jess Moody, doing lighting, so I get to catch my breath.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story of Helen Keller. Everyone's pretty familiar with that. And then we're wrapping up the season with 1940s Radio Hour, which is a Christmas show. It's a 1940s radio broadcast. They're sending holiday spirit and wishes to the troops overseas. So there's a lot of like 40s jazz music, and that's a cute show, too.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah.
Currently at Whitehall?
Whitehall, we are getting ready for Guys and Dolls.
Ah.
That opens in April as well. I do the lighting for them, and that also kind of gets sidetracked into helping with rigging and special light-up signs and other ridiculous projects because I just never say no.
Do you prefer to do the lighting and the set at the same time? Or, I mean, if you had...
Honestly, yes. I prefer to do both.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's easier than trying to share space sometimes with other people. Also, I have greater control over the finished product. There are certain, I don't know, I'm a control freak. I like to.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, to do it all.
I mean, because part of what it's doing is set and lighting. And lighting is another thing. Lighting is another thing that the audience, if it works, is probably unaware of, but it's incredibly powerful for creating that picture. So working with the set and the lighting together makes sense.
And that, again, depending on the show, for Vanya, it was very crucial. We wanted the background where there were no walls to be very kind of dark and not seen. So you have to change the way you use the lighting. You have to angle it more steeply. You don't use a traditional yellow or amber color. You use more muted colors. I tend to do more roses and blues just because with the deeper colors, it gives a more moody feel to it. Mm. When you're doing a bright, happy musical like Music Man, you use light blues and ambers and yellows. You use bright, happy colors. So it really, the color that you put in front of the light really conveys a lot of different moods into the different scenes.
It's interesting because I know I do occasionally do a bit of costuming, and when I started, it didn't occur to me to just think of what that would look like under light mm-hmm. and how much it would change it. I mean, it was really eye-opening to mm-hmm. me. It
makes a world of difference. You totally. Put your actress in a white gown, she walks out on stage under blue lights, it's not white anymore.
Exactly, yeah. exactly.
And then every once in a while, you'll probably get a director who doesn't want the lights as bright
yes.
as most directors do.
Correct. And that's George speaking of himself. But it plays to the specific show. When you're doing something like Vanya and Sonia, it's a dark comedy. It doesn't make sense to have bright, cheery lighting, even for the funny parts, because they're not happy people, and that's part of the comedy. Same thing for City of Angels. When I'm doing the black and white versus the color, you need the contrast. So for that, the color, you use brighter colors. For mm-hmm. the black and white, you use blues and grays, make it deeper and more moody.
And what brought you to this? Was this your background? I mean,
dumb luck. I did technical theater in high school. I was in the stage crew. I went to college for it, and I absolutely hated it.
Really?
And I stopped doing it and didn't do theater for years and years and years. I wound up doing some shows at Munopco, singing and dancing in the ensemble. A friend of mine was doing a summer production of Evita, asked me if I would do his lighting. I did. At the cast party after that show, I had a little bit too much to drink, and apparently I volunteered to do the set and lighting for his high school productions, which I found out about 2 days later, and here I am.
Congratulations.
It was a wonderful, wonderful mistake, but yeah.
So what made you, what dissuaded you for a while? What disappointed you in college? I'm curious.
It was so regulated and so restrictive, I felt, in most programs. If you were assigned to hang lighting for a production, that was all that you were allowed to do.
Okay, yeah.
If you were assigned for construction, that was all you were allowed to do. Well, I wanted to design it, I wanted to build it, I wanted to paint it, and I wanted to light it when it was done, and I prefer, as haphazard as it can be sometimes, I prefer the community theater end of it, where people are doing everything and everybody's into all the different aspects of it.
Yeah.
But that must be challenging to you as well, because I know you put in an awful lot of hours on set construction, mm-hmm. and trying to meet your own standards mm-hmm. Is even more difficult than meeting anyone else's standard.
I always like to challenge myself, mm-hmm. and part of the challenge in that space is to not do the same set or not do the same show time after time, so I get to compete against myself. you have to do this sort of thing because, not because you want to, but because you have to. Yeah. Because you love it, and there's a burning desire to create, to express yourself, and to be able to convey those emotions to other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do a fantastic job, let me tell
you.
And I'm glad that you're a performer as well, because you can appreciate both sides of the whole theater experience.
I was going to say, that's one of the things that I think, I'm just quickly running out of time, but I also studied theater in college and had mixed feelings and was very drawn to the small studio theater the students ran, because it replicated that kind of your costuming, your acting, your mm-hmm. this and that, and taking it and kind of becoming this really well-rounded ensemble member in a sense. You're much more useful, I felt.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we want to mention again that Pennsylvania Playhouse has a full scale of programming productions coming up within the next couple months.
Correct.
For more information, you can just key into paplayhouse.org.
That's right.
Or give them a call. They're in the book.
Or come right now. Meet me down at the theater for auditions for Rumors. I'm heading there right now after this. You can audition for the show and ask all sorts of questions.
Oh, that's great. Brett Olivera, thank you.
Thanks
for staying in the Lehigh Valley and for being such a great talent.
Thank you very, very much.
You're quite welcome. Yeah. Well, now we shall return shortly with Sarah Carlson, founder and artistic director of DanceLink, which seeks to bridge people, ideas, and understanding through movement. All this following this salient message.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Thank you for being with us at Lehigh Valley Art Salon. This is 88.1 WDIY, and we're talking now with Sarah Carlson, the founder and artistic director of DanceLink, who is going to tell us about her Ice House Tonight production, which is coming up. Hi, welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. We were talking a little bit before the show. This is, I was surprised. I didn't realize this is yours and DanceLink's fifth piece presented at the Ice House.
Yes, this is my fifth full evening of work here in the Valley, and they've all been at the Ice House. I am in love with the space. I think, as I mentioned earlier, there's something really mystical, magical, earthy about it. And it just is like, the space itself is like a muse for me. And so it's very cavernous for those who haven't been there. There are actually two performance areas, one smaller stage on one end, and then the large space, which is where I always present my work. Like the black box theater that you guys were just speaking about, there are no wings.
Right.
So basically, it's just this big, beautiful, exposed wood floor with, mm-hmm. you know, rafters rising, you know, 20, 30 feet in the air. And it's just ripe for creating worlds or clouds, mm-hmm. as the case may be in this setting.
That's interesting. We've done a little bit of theater there as well, and I would agree. I find the space really, really warm and full of spirit and energy. It's just grand. Do the pieces that you present there, if it is in fact your muse, let's say Cloud of Unknowing, was it particularly, and not site-specific, but does it respond to the space, or what would be the influences and inspiration for Cloud of Unknowing?
I like to unpack, to explore the big questions in my choreography. And quite often they come with spiritual undertones. My brother is actually coming in from New York City. He's a lighting designer. He'll be doing our lights. And so there's something about the combination of movement, the light, and the ideas that are being explored that sort of elevates and comes to this level of rarefied air. I mean, there's something, the Ice House tends to be kind of a darker space to light because it is so cavernous. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I find that sort of allows the viewer to sort of lose themselves in the performance. Mm. And in terms of sort of dealing with some of the big questions, so for example, the Cloud of Unknowing, we are walking into the realm of uncertainty, of not knowing the future. You know, for me, that brings up, you know, a very embodied physical world of feeling. It's something that we can all relate to. It's a reality we all share. And so we'll be unpacking that in a variety of different ways. Some of the pieces on the program are group pieces. Mm-hmm. Some of the pieces, then there's a trio, a duet, and a solo. Mm-hmm. So really unpacking the idea of corporate unknowing as well as unknowing in relationships, mm-hmm. unknowing within the self.
It's interesting. And the music looks very interesting, the choices and the musicians.
Yes. So we have some live drumming, live percussion,
right.
on the newest work on the program called What I Know. And Maud Durant and Tiffany Kent will be joining us. And my last evening of work, The Unbelievable Beauty of Being Human, also featured live music. And, my husband said, never do recorded music again.
That's great.
So I'm really excited about that. It really, you know, there's an energy, there's a life that live music brings. But in addition, and I'm glad that you'd mentioned the music, I'm using excerpts from a score called The Cloud of Unknowing, which was actually the original inspiration for this evening by Robert Keir.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an exquisitely beautiful classical piece for vocals and strings. And it really was sort of what brought me into and called me to choreograph the entire program.
Hmm.
And so that was his sort of musical exploration of the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then I am doing my part through movement. And in the process, I came to become aware that the Cloud of Unknowing is actually originally a text written by an anonymous monk from the 13th century, and the cloud of unknowing is referring to the divine as being, you know, something that we just can't fully understand. So yeah, there's a lot going on.
Oh, that's gorgeous. For the listener, just to, you know, we often think it's interesting, how do things come together and what is that like life like that ends up on the stage? Your dancers, where do they come from? Who are they? What are your connections to them?
Sure. Well, I've been based in the Lehigh Valley for 8 or 9 years now, and I've been doing most of my work right here. So the dancers are professionals, dancers who are working by and large here in the Valley. This program also is using several college students, two DeSales students and two Cedar Crest college students. And as happens, when you work in higher ed and you use students, a few of the students graduated and moved away. So one of them is coming in from Baltimore and one of them is coming in from D.C. But by and large, they're all based here in the Valley. And I think that that is something that is important for me. Obviously, you need to have ready access to your artists. But in terms of the Ice House Tonight performance series, there's something really important to the series about it being a series that's featuring local sustainable arts, really featuring artists that are working and living and using talent based here in the Valley.
And you can draw some of your dancers because you are a faculty member of Muhlenberg, DeSales, Cedar Crest, Lehigh, and the University of Mississippi. So all of those students can gather around you and dance as well.
That's right. That's right.
But the Ice House Tonight series, that's a kind of a an important part of the hopes of the goals for the series is to particularly to showcase the sustainable and local. And I would think, too, to appeal to a younger audience as well as anyone, but it's Bethlehem's such an energy that it just seems like it's an ideal audience if you can tap it.
Yes, there are. It's a very arts friendly town. I actually personally live in Allentown, but I continually am drawn back to Bethlehem to produce my work. I would love to also be active in Allentown, but for now, there's just so much energy, so much support, so many ripe spaces. It's fertile ground, Bethlehem.
It is indeed. And DanceLink itself, what was the inspiration? What was the reason for creating it? How does it serve you and your work?
Yeah, DanceLink is a pickup company, which means it comes together on a project per project basis. And really, my goals were to help people understand and make that link between themselves and dance. Dance, especially modern dance, tends to be kind of cryptic. People don't quite know what that term means. Often they don't understand. They feel like they, you know, are shy. They shy away from going to a dance performance because they feel like they won't understand. And my mission is to help people realize that the body is actually just a repository for all of our experience. And so if you have a body, you are an expert in reading bodies already. My goal is to make really accessible, rich work that help people sort of embrace that, embrace the profound ability of the body to express what words cannot.
I know improv plays a lot, a role in your work, and is it interplay? I know that you... Could you tell us a little bit about...
Yes.
I'm intrigued by it.
Yes. Yes. I have been increasingly using improv in my compositional structures. Interplay is a creative practice that is... it was developed on the West Coast by Cynthia Winton Henry and Phil Porter, and it includes this incredible ethic of ease and accessibility, and it's actually designed for any person, certainly not dancers or right. artists in particular.
Which dovetails perfectly with your take
exactly.
on dance and the accessibility and exactly. our understanding of it. Yeah.
And its mission is to help people unpack the wisdom of their bodies. Huh. And so I've used that as a tool in terms of my own work. The Cloud of Unknowing, of course, is talking about, you know, exploring the unknown, and improvisation is doing exactly that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. The Ice House tonight, incidentally, is a collaborative and innovative programming for established regional arts groups. And you can see the Cloud of Understanding on February the 20th, Saturday, February the 20th at 8 p.m. That's 56 River Street in Bethlehem. You know where it is. And for more information, just check in with scdancelink@gmail.com. Sarah, we're so proud to have been able to talk to you today about your efforts in the dance community, and we hope to dedicate more of our time here on Lehigh Valley Arts Salon to dance in the Lehigh Valley.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Next up on Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, At the Movies, a review of a current film with Paul Willistein of the Press.
The plainly titled Carol is based on a novel with a much more intriguing title, The Price of Salt, written by Patricia Highsmith, best known for Strangers on a Train, a 1950 novel adapted for a 1951 film directed by Alfred Hitchcock, and also The Talented Mr. Ripley, a 1955 novel adapted for a 1999 film directed by Anthony Minghella. Carol is nominated for 6 Oscars: actress Cate Blanchett, supporting actress Rooney Mara, adapted screenplay Phyllis Nagy, cinematography Edward Lachman, costume Sandy Powell, and score Carter Burwell. Carol is set in the early 1950s United States, predominantly New York City. Cate Blanchett portrays Carol, an older woman facing marital difficulties. Rooney Mara portrays Therese, a department store clerk to whom Carol is attracted. The story revolves around their falling in love and the problems their relationship creates for them, their families, and their careers. Carol doesn't rise to the level of intrigue and lacks the emotional wallop of either Strangers on a Train or The Talented Mr. Ripley. That's because of the predictability of Phyllis Nagy's screenplay, and also the steady yet unexciting pacing and somewhat daytime soap opera predictability in the direction by Todd Haynes. Haynes directed I'm Not There, Far From Heaven, and Velvet Goldmine. Carol is also hampered by stereotypical acting among its supporting cast. However, the scenes between Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara have a quiet reserve, palpable passion, and explosive power when the two connect. And connect they do. Their Oscar nominations are well-deserved, especially that for Rooney Mara, who creates a memorable performance with a tentativeness in mannerisms, uncomfortableness in her personality, and gradual awakening to her own emotions. Carol is fun for its recreating of an early 1950s America, replete with costume designer Sandy Powell's choice of lovely outfits for Carol and Therese. The interior design, furniture, and accoutrements, as well as the era's automobiles, add to the believability of the mise-en-scene. The cinematography by Edward Lachman lavishes attention on the setting's sumptuous details. Carol is MPAA rated R for a scene of sexuality, nudity, and brief language. Opening February 10 are Deadpool. Tim Miller directs Ryan Reynolds, Karen Soni, Ed Skrein, and Michael Benyer in the science fiction action film about a former Special Forces operative who has special healing powers. Zoolander 2. Ben Stiller directs Olivia Munn, Benedict Cumberbatch, Kristen Wiig, Penelope Cruz, himself, and Owen Wilson in the comedy that reunites Derek and Hansel trying to prevent a competitor from putting them out of business. Sounds like a great Valentine's Day date movie. How to Be Single. Christian Ditter directs Dakota Johnson, Allison Brie, Leslie Mann, and Rebel Wilson in the romantic comedy about a group of single friends in New York City. Sounds like a great Valentine's Day date movie. Touch with Fire. Paul Dalio directs Katie Holmes, Luke Kirby, Christy Lottie, and Griffin Dunn in the romantic drama about two manic depressives who meet in a psychiatric hospital and fall in love. Doesn't sound like a great Valentine's Day date movie. I'm Paul Willistein of the Lehigh Valley Press at the movies for WDIY.